thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
That's what I do.
Here's John Williams.
Sometimes it doesn't work out, but I guarantee you, each and every day I get up and put on my socks, I give it my best. It's 108. This is John. We're in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue, and we'll follow the news and throw some things in you didn't think about. That's what we do on the John Williams Show all the way until 3 on the one. We have told you the past couple of weeks that there's this thing called Podcast Fest. It's just that, a festival of podcasts recorded on stages, and you can be in the audience. We think it's swell. We will be part of Podcast Fest this year, October 7th at the famous Old Town School. I'm telling you, I think this would be a great night. If you like listening to the radio, and you do, if you like podcasts, and you should, it's the radio without commercials, for crying out loud, then you should go to this, particularly since the Old Town School's near some fun restaurants and bars, so you can make a very nice evening of it October 7th. So Steve Bertrand, Krista McQuarrie, Eric Zorn, and I will be on the stage at the Old Town School doing our thing for half an hour. Nick DiGilio will do a half hour of his. Kelly Leonard, half hour of his. It'll be 90 minutes. Movies and Broadway shows should be that short, but ours will be tight. So I hope that you can attend. In fact, we'll give you a preview of what it would sound like in a few minutes here, but I just want to remind you that Podcast Fest tickets are still for sale if you go to WGNradio.com/events. Go to WGNradio.com/events, and you can get your tickets now. In fact, if we were doing it today, we would surely, and we probably will on Saturday, be talking a little bit about some of the issues attendant to the Las Vegas shooting. Before we get to all of that, I had an interesting experience, Stephen. It's just a quaint little observation I like to share when I ever go to the Genius Bar at Apple. Because I was at the Genius Bar at Apple getting my shattered iPhone face replaced.
Which side were you on? Were you as a genius or as someone in need of a genius?
I'm going to let you have that. So
could be 50-50.
Here's what you'll notice, too. And it's more pronounced now than ever, at least at the store on Michigan Avenue. And that is that the geniuses are all young, hip, smart, positive, almost exclusively people of color. I mean, of the 20 people that were behind the counter at the Genius Bar, I would say 15 of them were African Americans when I was there. 25-year-old young African Americans.
Okay.
And I would say of the 20 people they were helping, all of them looked like me. All of them were 57-year-old men with gray sideburns going, "So when I hit the thing, I don't know." And I think it's just such an interesting reversal of what life has been like for so many of us and so many of them. How often is it that older people or white people or people of a certain means are in control? They're the disseminator of informations. They're the ones saying, "Now you do this, you do that." But now we're in the seat, they're standing there, and we're giving them money to show us how the world works. How often does that happen? Do you thankfully sit in a situation like that? Some of us are a little cranky. Some of us are positively befuddled. We don't even know the vocabulary to convey to them the frustration we're having with our devices. And then some of us get it, but we just ain't working. In either case, the amount of patience that is required on their side of the Genius Bar in itself is something to behold. To say nothing of the knowledge, to say nothing of just how often is it do you see it flip-flop like this.
So the pep talk before the stores open, all right, be nice to the little old white people who will be coming in.
Kind of, yeah. And I mean, and I think, you know, it's not just race, it's age. Maybe it's gender in some way, I'm not sure. But just it is a flip-flop of so much of the power dynamic, so much of the information dynamic that we're used to in this country, in this world. I mean, the older people have had more experience. They've got more money. They've had more opportunity, blah, blah, blah. You young people, stand in line. It's not that way at the Apple Genius Bar.
I was actually just there, too. This is somewhat related to what you were saying.
Well, I hope so, because it's a radio show and we're live on the air.
Well, I was at the Apple store the other day for my laptop, and I think I irritated my genius. Yeah. Who
what did you do?
This is what I was this is what this pertains to. It's the patience that these people have.
Or have to have.
Right. He might not have the patience, but he exhibits patience. But I was showing him my laptop that I've had for 7 years, and he was just saying, well, we don't repair this model anymore.
Yeah, which, by the way, sidebar, that's crazy.
I know.
That's like bringing a 1957 Chevy to the Chevy dealer. They still need to fix the Chevy. Keep going.
Well, the one thing I kept telling him was, be informed, I have no intention of buying a new laptop.
So
but
did that
now
help?
Now I think I'm going to have to
buy a new laptop, yeah. So they weren't able to fix it because they said, I'm sorry, this model's too old?
He said, there's nothing I can do to fix this.
My shattered glass was going to cost $158 to replace. $158. It sounds like a lot, but the new ones, you know, they're $600 or whatever. I don't have the 7 or the 8, but still. But I always buy the insurance. I always get the insurance. I always struggle when they say, well, do you want the insurance? But I never go without. And I've probably used that insurance 7 times, a lot of times. So for $29, I've walked out with what appears to be a new phone. And as before, I refuse to put that little tortoise shell around it or whatever they call it. The case. You know, I kind of...
That's your problem. That's why they break.
Your Honor.
Okay.
I resent the fact that they sell you this not entirely fragile device. And then they say, now, to really make it safe so you don't ruin a $600 gadget, you ought to spend another $29 on this case. I'm like, well, then you give me the case. Make the thing safe for people. You know, I mean, they know full well we're going to drop these things. And then they sell you the case for $29.
Well, the good ones are $89. But
it would be like if I said, hey, here's your new car. The airbags and bumpers, that's going to be extra. Now, you don't have to get airbags and bumpers, but boy, I wouldn't take it out of the showroom without airbags and bumpers.
I have a new car, and I bought the extended warranty.
Yeah.
And I just got a call. It's in the shop. The module I need.
Yeah.
Everything around it is covered.
Yeah.
My module's not covered.
Well, this is what happens.
$1,000.
It's the $29 muffler.
But
it's
wait.
It's the $29 muffler, but the pipes and everything that go to it cost $300.
So you're buying a phone that, in rather than spend $29 because you don't think you should, you're putting it at risk, and your family dealing with you the next time you break a screen.
My family does make more of an issue out of it than I do. In my defense, this is the last thing I'll say, then we'll go to the Mincing Rascals preview. I kind of like the look and feel. Mine is a little sleeker and sexier. Those of you with those great big rubbery tires in your back pocket,
mm-hmm.
Not happening with this guy. I want the smooth, slim surface. It's 1:19 on WGN. This is John Williams. And this is the theme we use for something we call the Mincing Rascals podcast, a podcast we record in the studios of WGN Radio most Thursdays. We're going to do it live on stage Saturday night. You can still get tickets by going to WGNradio.com/events.
Hey!
No, now you say I'm Kristen McQuarrie.
Oh!
Let's do it the way we do. Oh, so actually, Steve usually goes next. So, Steve, you introduce yourself.
I'm Steve Bertrand, host of the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN.
And I'm Kristen McQuarrie, the ill-timed and ill-prepared member of the Chicago Tribune editorial board, apparently.
And?
I'm Eric Zorn, the remote columnist from the Tribune.
Where you at, Zorny?
I'm home.
He's coming up on the boards. I can see your home phone number, Eric. Should I tell everybody what it is?
Oh, you know, everybody's got all my information in this digital age.
Yes, that's true.
We play that little theme for the Mincing Rascals podcast, and then usually the four of us, sometimes Scott Stantis, sometimes Rob Martier and others, will join us when one of the three of you can't make it. And then we post a little podcast where we kick around current events. Let's start with this one, guys. The president says he will revisit gun laws. Are any of you optimistic that he'll break ranks, as he has with Republicans, and actually do something to make it more difficult for people to get guns like this? You go first.
I don't think it will be unexpected that maybe Trump will do that, but the problem is never necessarily what the president wants. The problem is a couple of holdout, in the last case, senators who are very, very strong Second Amendment proponents, and they will block anything that they view as an infringement on that right. So I think the bigger problem is where do we see the Ted Cruz's of the world or some of these other very conservative Second Amendment supporters actually step forward and do things that law-abiding gun owners say are good ideas?
Like
federal background checks, like.
How about nobody could ever buy a machine gun unless you're the Army? Unless you're the Navy, you can't have a machine gun.
Those laws actually are already in place.
In Las Vegas, my understanding is you can buy these weapons. These were legally purchased.
Well, I think he bought a semi-automatic and then converted it. So just so, I've actually fired one of these, and I think people get confused. But a semi-automatic, an AR-15, you have to actually pull the trigger each time you want to release a bullet. But a machine gun is what really just the armed forces use, where you get multiple.
My understanding is that in Nevada, in fact, you can buy a machine gun. Under certain circumstances, you can actually own a machine gun. That may not be the case.
I think those are collectors. I think it's very closely regulated. But Kristen's right. You can buy converting equipment that turns them into automatic weapons.
Well, as Jimmy Kimmel said last night, Eric, shouldn't we just find a way to make it more difficult to buy the weapons, to get the converters? Shouldn't we make it by law more difficult for people to get the weapons that he had? I mean, is that difficult?
If I had my way, we'd do that. If I had my way, people would not have military-style weapons with these huge magazines and so on. But I don't have my way, and I'm not optimistic that I will, because of the reluctance to tamper with anything that seems to infringe on gun.
Boy, then nothing's going to change their mind. You shoot up a school, doesn't change their mind.
Well, whose mind are you talking about? Because I think most gun owners agree that there should be more controls than there are. I mean, most of these gun control issues have popular support. They just can't get through the lobby and the people in the Congress.
That's why Jimmy Kimmel said last night that the gun lobby has these people's nuts in a money clip, and they won't budge.
This is the 275th day of 2017, and if you measure mass shootings as four more people shot, we've had 273.
We've had one every day.
Almost one every day.
This year.
I mean, let's be clear that, well, you guys weigh in. I don't think necessarily making some of these changes at the federal level is going to end the type of massacre that happened in Las Vegas. When you have someone who is determined to do this, we've installed metal detectors. We now all around Chicago have barricades outside of big sporting events. We've done things reactively to try to prevent this from happening. If you are a determined psychomasochist killer, you are going to get around whatever the federal government does. That does not mean that we shouldn't pass these laws. I'm just saying. We always shift into gun control.
I saw an article online today, and I didn't read it, so shame on me.
No, that's okay. I'll tell you what it said.
Go ahead and talk about it, though. Let's hear it.
Here's exactly what it said. No, but the headline was that it is harder to buy Sudafed in some states than it is to buy a gun.
Totally.
Yeah, that's
totally
true.
Which is
crazy. Well, I think that this notion that it's not going to make us safer if we do this is a bit of a misnomer. You can't know what you don't know. Maybe those laws will make it more difficult for some people. I'm willing to give it a try. I'm not sure what the harm in those laws are, except for the principle.
I think Kristen's right. You can make it more difficult. John, you're right. You can make it more difficult. But there are people, when they are determined, as this shooter evidently was, there was very little way you're going to stop someone like that, given the number of soft targets we have in this country.
But the argument shouldn't be that we're going to stop that, because we're not. You're right. We're not going to ever end them.
But you're not saying give up, are you?
But we can limit them. Or we can make them harder to be successful.
I'll take 1 in 1,000 as opposed to 1 in 500. I don't know what the number is, but I mean, if we diminish by one mass shooting a day, wouldn't anybody go with that? I do not understand why that is so difficult to sell. I don't understand why. And I don't know if it's the money that the lobby gives the legislators that makes them beholden to them, because then they get reelected, or if it's the principle. Do they really feel that strongly about the Second Amendment?
I would say it's both. I mean, if you are Ted Cruz in Texas and you vote for any sort of a gun control bill that is interpreted, or that the NRA can interpret as infringing on the rights of gun owners, you're going to lose your seat. I'm not saying that's right. I'm saying this would be a good hill to die on, as far as I'm concerned.
Right, and John, but it's not that they're losing the money from the NRA. It's that the NRA will challenge them.
Put up somebody else who might beat them with that.
Exactly. They're not voting for the NRA to keep the 10 grand that they get every year or whatever. They're voting with the NRA to keep the NRA and others to putting up a primary opponent to them.
Except that Eric is usually in the studio. I asked the three of you to do this with me this afternoon because I want our audience to know what the Mincing Rascals podcast feels like, if nothing else. It's this sort of free-form exchange where we all beat up on Kristen, and then she somehow always wins. And then we go to another topic. For instance, give me 35 seconds on this, guys. will the beverage tax be repealed in Cook County? Steve, put on your soothsayer
hat. It's committee hearing a week from today. I don't think it will be rescinded, but I think there's probably a major revision coming.
What's your prediction for this?
I predict that it will get repealed, but then the president, Tony Preckwinkle, will present an override to that. And so we will end up getting stuck with it unless the state legislature steps in.
How about you, Zorn?
No, I agree with Chris, and I think it's going to be repealed, but the Preckwinkle will veto it, and then they will not be overridden. There's a chance that state law will come in and override the whole thing, and it won't be repealed. It'll just have to be erased.
All right, here comes the recommendations part. We always close the podcast with the recommendations. I'm recommending you read Americana, A 400-Year History. Steve Cochran just interviewed the author the other day. The book was laying around. I picked it up. Oh, my God, is this anecdotal and fascinating. It's a history of how capitalism has shaped America from the Pilgrims. Sounds boring. It's fascinating. It's intriguing. I'm recommending Americana, A 400-Year History. What do you like?
I got nothing. I'm going to save it for our live broadcast.
This is the hardest part of the podcast.
Which is Saturday at 7 p.m., right? You can go to Old Town. This is on the way north side, so you're getting me like 2 hours from my
somebody
house.
On the south side.
From the far south
I can
side.
Walk to this thing.
You can?
I literally can.
Oh, my God. Yes,
I
know
Eric. It's a home game for me and John.
Great. So where are we pre-gaming?
Actually, Brenda was thinking we might have cocktails or snacks
I'll
at my
there.
Place. So that's Kristen McQuarrie. You guys would give us your prediction if I had the time, but that's the way it works. And Ben Cortez usually produces, and Elif Garris always... Ben engineers, and Elif produces The Mincing Rascals. So go to WGNradio.com/events and get your tickets. Kristen, nice to see you. Thanks for
you
coming
too.
In.
I'll see you in a couple days.
Thank you, Mr. Zorn.
We'll see you soon.
Thank you, Steve.
I'm a bad boy, 'cause I don't even.
It was late in yesterday's show. We got word that Tom Petty was failing fast. He may have passed away at the time. There were mixed views. Now we know the story. Tom Petty died October 2nd, 2017, at the young age of 66. It's coming up on a birthday, October 20th, 1950. He was born in Gainesville, Florida. So I go to the wiki when things like this happen, particularly when I know a lot of people know about it, but I don't know that much about it. So I'm always catching up, especially on music artists, sports figures, things like that. Petty recorded a number of hit singles with the Heartbreakers, and as a solo artist, many of which are mainstays on adult, contemporary, and classic rock radio, his music has been classified as rock and roll, heartland rock, and stoner rock. In his career, Petty sold more than 80 million records worldwide. He was one of the best-selling music artists of all time. I'll get to the list in a second. In the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, suffered cardiac arrest yesterday and died later at a hospital in Santa Monica. He was born in 1950 in Florida, the first of two sons to Kitty and Earl Petty. His interest in rock and roll music began when, at the age of 10, he met Elvis Presley. In the summer of 1961, his uncle was working on the set of Presley's film Follow That Dream in nearby Ocala, or do you say Ocala, and invited Petty.
Ocala.
Okay. So none of the above. I didn't have a good feel for either of those. So there's Tom Petty's uncle working on the Elvis Presley film. And he says, why don't you come down and watch the shoot? Petty comes down and says he instantly became an Elvis Presley fan. And when he returned that Saturday, he was greeted by his friend and soon traded his Wham-O slingshot for a collection of his friend's Elvis 45s. In 2006, in an interview, Petty said that he knew he wanted to be in a band the moment he saw the Beatles on the Ed Sullivan Show. The minute I saw the Beatles on the Ed Sullivan Show, and it's true of thousands of guys, there was the way out. There was the way to do it. You get your friends, and you're a self-contained unit, and you make the music, and it looked like so much fun. It was something I identified with. I had never been hugely into sports. I had been a big fan of Elvis, but I really saw in the Beatles that there's something I could do. I knew I could do it. if it wasn't long before there were groups springing up in garages all over the place. He dropped out of high school at the age of 17 to play bass with his newly formed band. As a young man, Petty worked briefly on the grounds crew at the University of Florida, but never attended as a student. They planted, it says here, a lime tree that he planted while employed at the university is now called the Tom Petty tree there. Petty stated that he did not recall planting any trees. Petty also overcame a difficult relationship with his father, who found it hard to accept that his son was a mild-mannered kid who was interested in the arts. His father subjected him to verbal and physical abuse on a regular basis. Petty was extremely close to his mother and remained close to his brother, Bruce. In 1988, Petty joined George Harrison's group called the Traveling Wilburys, which also included Bob Dylan, Roy Orbison, Jeff Lynne. Can you imagine? Every now and then friends of mine who talk music will mention the Traveling Wilburys. I never listened to the Traveling Wilburys, but oh my God, what a lineup. I mean, you got the Beatles and the Rolling Stones, but for bands that weren't together forever, is that like one of the all-time great lineups? Found unconscious at his home, not breathing, and in full cardiac arrest in the early morning of October 2nd. His death was prematurely reported by media outlets that afternoon. You look at the list of the best-selling artists of all time, and he's on there. But number one is, all right, here's the quiz, Steve. Number one selling artist or group of all time is, you want to play all if you know music? Ding, 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 the Beatles, 600 million units sold.
Okay, Beatles.
Claim sales. Number two, after the Beatles?
ABBA.
ABBA is in the top 10. ABBA is ahead of the Rolling Stones, much to the Rolling Stones, I think, dismay.
Much to the world's dismay.
Elvis is number two. Michael Jackson is number three. Madonna is four. Elton John, five. All of that sounds about right. Led Zeppelin is next. Then Pink Floyd with 250 million wow. claim sales. Rihanna, Mariah Carey, Celine Dion, AC/DC tops out the top 10. Whitney Houston is at 11, Queen at 12, the Rolling Stones at 13, and ABBA at 14. So the Stones just edge out, maybe with the same amount, maybe not.
See, I think if I'm after Mariah Carey and Whitney Houston, I just ask not to be on the list. Thanks for the invitation, but we're going
to
take a pass.
You know, that's easy to say about Mariah Carey, but Whitney Houston was...
I'm not ripping them. I'm just saying that, you
kinda,
know.
It kind of sounded like you were.
It's not
there.
Really ripping them. It's
what
like,
is that?
But it's like, you know, I know they were hugely successful, sold a lot, but there's a little hipness lost there, right? So you lose the hipness if you're below Whitney Houston or Mariah Carey.
I've never understood the Mariah Carey thing, but I get it. I mean, you know, maybe you don't like Queen, and I'm happy that Queen is on the list, same page as the Rolling Stones. And that gets you to page 14 of an 85-page wiki document. All the way down on page 53, there's Reba McEntire with 80 million sold, Meatloaf, 80 million sold, Barry Manilow, Tom Petty, and Johnny Hallyday, all with about 80 million sold.
Wow, that's surprising to me.
That Barry Manilow is so low on the list?
Yeah.
Yeah, how does Barry Manilow fall 50 pages behind
of
these people?
He stopped selling albums a long time ago.
Maybe that was it?
Petty was always selling albums still.
Yeah, yeah. When you get past Johnny Hallyday and Tom Petty, and you've got the Black Eyed Peas, Journey, Kenny G, Alabama, Nirvana, not bad company. Tom Petty, one of the great ones. And so we've all been listening to, you know, the downloads have surged. They say the estate's now making money like it never has before. That's just the way those things go. There was talk yesterday after the shooting in Las Vegas about whether or not the president should or will call it an act of domestic terrorism. And it's more than a semantic thing. It's a different kind of crime. And there's pretty good reason to not call it an act of domestic terrorism. I am not that bothered or interested by what we call it. I am very interested and bothered by the sale of these weapons, by how easy we make it for these people, by how evidently impossible it will be to change some of the deciders' minds on this issue. So that's perplexing to me. But do we call it an act of domestic terrorism or terrorism? Isn't all that important. And at the end of the day, it may be better that we don't call it an act of terrorism. Why? In just a minute. Plus, gunmaker stocks. Have you seen what's happened to those lately? In a minute. So the reason that, at least currently, I mean, whatever your persuasion is on this, the reason we don't call what happened, say, in Las Vegas or previously Charleston, South Carolina, when a guy shot up a church, an act of terrorism, is because terrorism is a different kind of crime that requires different kinds of resources. There's different penalties. You can't, as I understand, a plea bargain with somebody who's charged with terrorism. And so maybe sometimes you want to cut a deal, find out the truth, find out what, who else was involved. Sometimes they literally don't want to call it terrorism for prosecutorial reasons. But this was in the Las Vegas Sun this week. U.S. law defines a terrorist as having ties to a foreign entity, such as the Islamic State or other known terror groups. Homegrown extremist groups, such as neo-Nazis, the Ku Klux Klan, are not labeled that way, even if they employ similar tactics of violence and intimidation because they're homegrown. Even when convicted under non-terrorism charges, domestic terrorists can face the same punishment. Why do you want to charge somebody with terrorism? So that we can execute them. Well, we can do that anyway. So it may be simpler, it may be easier, it may be quicker, it may be less resource intensive. You can still get a long sentence or capital punishment for people that do these sorts of things. Good Lord, if Paddock hadn't shot himself, don't you think that he would have, I don't know if it's a capital punishment state, have been executed or spent the rest of his life in jail? You would have gotten the same thing for him either way. There's also a practical consideration in trying a local terror case: efficiency, says the Las Vegas Sun. Many prosecutors would rather strike a plea deal than pursue a terrorism case that could slog through a federal court. Once you officially label someone a terrorist, that's a big label that leaves you nowhere to go, said a public defender there. So maybe it's just as well that we have that sort of split setup in this country. Perhaps the most egregious strain of misinformation after the shooting in Las Vegas took place on places like Google and Facebook. Did you see this story from CNN.com? It's actually money.cnn.com. The old Money magazine on CNN says that after far-right trolls gathered on 4chan, a forum in which individuals are permitted to post almost anything anonymously, they misidentified the shooter. The false claim spread quickly on the internet. The Gateway Pundit, which, by the way, Donald Trump Jr. quotes all the time. I went to Donald Trump Jr.'s Twitter account today because I follow him. And, well, we hadn't been together in a while, so I saw what he was posting. And he posts stuff from the Gateway Pundit all the time. The Gateway Pundit, says CNN, says Money Magazine, is a far-right website, and it published a story declaring that the person that 4chan had named was the culprit, was the shooter in Las Vegas. It described him as someone thought to be, quote, a Democrat who liked Rachel Maddow, MoveOn.org, and associated with the anti-Trump army. The Gateway Pundit later deleted the story. They said they regretted the error. Yeah, they did. Other websites published similar claims, which were then amplified by Google. Literally, anyone who searched Google for the name of the person wrongly identified would see among the top results on Google links to websites that carried the false claim. Google got wrapped up in it. You Googled the name of the person that everybody said was the killer, and they say, yeah, there he is. Google said they changed their algorithm afterwards. Jimmy Kimmel was on TV last night. He's sort of become the, I don't know, the conscience of America is the right way to put it, but he gets very emotional these days. I think he actually moved the needle. I think history will remember him as a player in the health care debate, that we still have Obamacare in its current form, rightly or wrongly. I think you can attribute in small part to Jimmy Kimmel's monologuing about the discussion that he started. And now he dives into the gun debate. Maybe it's because he's a father. You know his emotions are raw. His child has a heart condition and needs surgery. So he's just feeling life and death all the time. And so last night at the beginning, my son and I tuned it in. We literally turned off Jerry Lewis's Nutty Professor, which we were watching on TV, so that we could switch. And by the way, that movie is really good, but I digress. So then we switch over to Jimmy Kimmel's monologue, and we watched it live last night. And I knew that it was going to be difficult for him to get through. He actually opened up in full tears. Jimmy Kimmel could barely say hello. And a few seconds in, he said this.
Last night, the White House Press Secretary Sarah Sanders said this is not the time, or actually it was today, this morning, she said it was not the time for political debate. And I don't know, we have 59 innocent people dead. It wasn't their time either. So I think now is the time for political debate.
And I said yesterday that I don't know that it is, because to me, the purpose of a debate is to persuade the other side. And when emotions are this, I mean, I get it. I'm not faulting Jimmy Kimmel at all. I'm on his side. But I'm always trying to pick my spots. And I think when nerves are this raw, people get very defensive, and you do not accomplish something. So if you want to stand on top of the mountain and say the other side is wrong and feel like you've got the moral high ground, yesterday was your day. Today is your day. But I don't sense any softening up on the other side. Actually, there is a video that's gone viral. One of the band members at the concert, who I think played before Aldean, actually said, you know, a lot of us in the band have guns. We're Second Amendment guys. Now I'm rethinking my position. I don't feel that way anymore. So there's the exception to the rule. But generally, I just don't think it's all that fruitful. He also said this last night.
President Trump is visiting Las Vegas on Wednesday. He spoke this morning. He said he's praying for those who lost their lives. You know, in February, he also signed a bill that made it easier for people with severe mental illness to buy guns legally.
The point that he's making there's twofold. I just wanted to comment on one. The business of praying for the people, our hopes and prayers. I know why we say that. Some of us say that who don't pray, and some of us say that not really expecting God to answer the prayers in a positive way. They're not going to bring the dead back, and they're not going to keep it from happening again, because it happens again. But we say our hopes and prayers are with you because literally we don't know what else to say. And because we won't say this, I'm going to change my view on gun laws. I'm going to do something about it. The politicians who refuse to change their view or get proactive about this will say our prayers are with these people, but their actions are not. Jimmy made that point loud and clear last night. I couldn't agree with him more. Maybe one more clip, Elif. He also said this last night.
I've been reading comments from people who say this is terrible, but there's nothing we can do about it. But I disagree with that intensely, because of course there's something we can do about it. There are a lot of things we can do about it. But we don't, which is interesting, because when someone with a beard attacks us, we tap phones, we invoke travel bans, we build walls, we take every possible precaution to make sure it doesn't happen again. But when an American buys a gun and kills other Americans, then there's nothing we can do about that.
And there is, but we don't. Well said, Jimmy Kimmel. Steve, we'll read more texts and maybe take some calls in the next hour about what happened in Las Vegas. But I have in my mind today Roy Moore, who may be on his way to the United States Senate in Alabama, the guy who wears the cowboy hat, rode a horse to vote the other day, and on stage says, I'm for the Second Amendment, and then pulls out his little real gun out of his back pocket.
Right.
And everybody cheers like that's the solution to some problem we have. That guy's on his way to make gun laws in America. You want to change things, you need to think about not Donald Trump or not the NRA or not some crazy guy in Nevada. You need to think about who you put in office. You want Roy Moore, you get to vote for him. But I think we need to start thinking about if abortion or pro-life or pro-choice is an issue for you. Everybody's got their buttons. But I think we should start to think about that as a button issue for us, too.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
Again!
Here's John Williams.
I already did! Hi, it's John. It's now 2:09. We're in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. We appreciate you tuning in. You can write. That is text or call 312-981-7200 anytime you like. We take calls. We read texts. We hope you join us. On the one. Real quick about the last hour's conversation, some of the texts included this. Hey, John, one person takes a baseball bat and plays a game. Another takes a baseball bat and beats 10 people to death with it. Doesn't mean we outlaw baseball. This one says, John, we now have reached a point in society where everyone has a right except the victims, but no one has a responsibility. John, why do we need to qualify it with the word domestic? The man terrorized a crowd, period. Hey, John, I'm a gun guy. I like guns. I like shooting handguns at the range. That being said, there are only two reasons you need to own an assault rifle. One, to go off on the weekends and shoot it for fun, and in some twisted way, this makes you feel manly. Or two, to kill people. We need to get rid of these guns. There is no reason to own an assault rifle. This has to stop. And from the 630 area code, your anti-gun rant is spoken like a guy whose kids, especially daughters, are not working or living in a high-crime area. You bet I armed my girl and made sure she knew how to use it. Nobody's saying you should not have a gun. No, where did you hear that? You did not hear that. Not from me, not from Jimmy Kimmel, not from anybody with a shred of sense yesterday. That is not what this conversation is about. And you can say that. This is why I didn't do it yesterday. That's why I don't even want to do it.
It's because it's an all or nothing conversation.
It is.
That's the problem.
That's totally what it is.
And so in Wisconsin right now, they're considering a bill that would allow convicted felons or people with restraining orders, like, domestic restraining orders. I've lost the phrase for what that is. You know, you can't go near your wife.
Yeah, sure.
To buy guns as long as they were antique weapons. Right now, you can't have a gun there if you're a felon or have a restraining order out, which is understandable.
Sure.
But they've appealed to that, and now they're going to maybe allow them to buy guns that still work, but they're old guns. And it's just weird to me. And this is probably maybe like the abortion issue, but this one's even, it seems starker, to where it's completely hard to understand one side or the other.
And neither right side, and especially that side.
I mean, I'm sure there are a lot of people who think, well, that's absolutely perfectly normal and fine. And, you know, they're good people. They have that view. For me, it's just hard to understand. Why can't you, if they can't have a regular gun, what's the harm in not letting them have any gun?
You know, and my view, since I'm clearly on one side of this issue, is that I don't think the anti-gun side needs to make that many concessions because there aren't that many more to make. Really, I mean, what do you want? Flamethrowers and bazookas? We have all the guns you want. Barack Obama did not roll back any legislation. In fact, stock sales went down. The value of those companies went down because everybody was able to get all the guns they wanted. Now, actually, the stock prices are going up because they fear that maybe this will put some sort of chill on the market. But nobody's been restricted in this country at all. So it's all or nothing. If I had a kid in a high crime area, if my wife was living alone away from me, or if we were in a high crime area, maybe we would have a gun. Nobody said you couldn't or shouldn't. In other news, you see, the FedEx is going to do some hiring here. I'm very excited about this.
Yeah.
Just because I'm always looking for jobs for people. Well-paying jobs. We did a segment about that yesterday with the Jane Addams Resource Center people. JARC works with a couple of groups in town. So FedEx, listen to this, is going to hire 1,250 people in Chicago, more than 50,000 throughout the country. They're going to hire them downtown and in LaGrange, so West, Carroll Stream, Wheeling, Grays Lake, Romeoville, Niles. And my understanding is they're doing the hiring right now. Jonathan Lyons is a FedEx spokesperson. Hey, Jonathan, it's John Williams. You're on WGN Radio. How are you?
Doing good, John. Thanks for having me.
Where are you from, Sam? Sam's coming on in a minute. Where are you, Jonathan? Are you in Chicago or are you outside of town?
I am outside of town. I'm actually in our headquarter office in Memphis, Tennessee.
Ah, yeah, the big hub. Are you guys? Some people think you guys are going to fight with us for the new Amazon plant, too. By the way, have you heard anything about that? You got any skinny for me on that, man?
Well, I know Amazon, you know, is a good customer for us and uses our network a lot to get a lot of their packages sent to customers they have all over the world, really. So we're just, you know, looking forward to, you know, still having them remain a great customer with us.
What a perfect answer. Okay, let's move on. So you guys are going to do some hiring. Do I understand 1,250 people in the Chicago area, right?
Yeah, that is correct. This is the time of year where FedEx is always ramping up on their their staffing due to the holiday season coming. As you know, online shopping continues to grow, that means we're having more packages and everything moving through our network. So across the country, it's, you know, 50,000 positions we're looking to fill. Right. Here in Chicago, about 1,200, you're correct.
When will these people work? Like November, December? Is that it?
Yeah, we would be starting to hire now, so bringing them on October, and especially November, December, and January. Those are our key moments, or excuse me, our key months for the holiday season. Yeah. And then after the holidays, many of these workers have the opportunity to stay on for full-time work.
Yeah, how many, could you give me a percentage or some sense of, say, I had a nice experience and I wanted to make it full-time, what percentage of people get to stay on with FedEx?
Yeah, well, last year we had about one-third of people that were hired that stayed on for full-time.
What's the wage you start these people at?
You know, I don't have specific wages available. I know that they are, you know, we keep them competitive and they kind of differentiate between cities and markets, though.
$12, $15 an hour, something like that?
Yeah, I believe they were in that. And I can even double-check with you guys to send you some stuff for Chicago later.
Do that, and I'll let you talk to my producer off the air, and then we'll just report that as we get that information in. So you're hiring them now. And then what would I be doing? Would I be, like, taking boxes off of trucks or conveyor belts, that sort of thing?
Yeah, majority of these that we hire for the holidays are seasonal, package handlers. So a lot of it is kind of sorting, whether you're at our hub or you're at one of these sorting facilities where they're coming in off trucks and getting them stacked properly so that the labels are visible for scanning so that they can go through and be put right on other trucks as they're delivered to their final destination.
Do I have to be able to lift a lot of weight? I mean, what are the health or physical requirements?
Yeah, usually it's around 75 pounds. So it is an active job. And it's one of those where, you know, definitely, you know, looking for somebody that's got, you know, a good attitude, can do spirit, very fast paced. But it's a great team to be part of. FedEx has always had just a great promote from within culture. So it's always something that can lead to great opportunities down the road.
If you want to find out more, I understand groundwarehousejobs.fedex.com is the website to go to. Is that what I do first?
Correct. You can use that one, or you could even use careers.fedex.com. Either of those two would be able to help.
Careers.fedex.com. FedEx. Careers.fedex.com. Sam Panionovich is still in Nevada from WGN Radio Sports. I have the pleasure of talking to him regularly on our Saturday show, Mondays too. So were you planning on being out there this long, Sam, or are you just not able to get out of Nevada now?
I plan on coming back tomorrow. The flight is at 12:40 Vegas time, and that hasn't changed since I stepped off the plane on Saturday night. Actually, no, Sunday night here in Vegas. So, no, nothing was altered. This was all planned, and like I told you yesterday, I had no intentions of leaving.
You told us yesterday, several of us on the various shows here at WGN, about your experience, starting with Nick DiGilio at night when you were seeing this crush of people coming at you as you were in your car, not going to or from the concert, but you saw the crowd making their mad dash away from the carnage, and have been following up with us all on your experiences since. You posted video today, or at least shared with me video of the line at, I guess, a Red Cross station for people donating blood, huh?
United Blood Services, yeah. It's a little bit off the strip, about 10 minutes away in Vegas. I went there early this morning. I left the hotel room about 7:30 to get there at 8, and the line was already out the door. I have to go back later and give blood because there were so many people, they had to turn people away like they did yesterday. The blood banks were completely full yesterday. They're full again today, which is really amazing to see all the good after all the bad, the resolve that we have in America. And I sent you that video. I started at the door of the building and walked out. It wrapped around three different times and then went all the way down the street. And there are volunteers, probably 30 volunteers from the Salvation Army, from the Red Cross. They're passing out bananas and oranges and breakfast sandwiches and coffee and water and fruit snacks. And just the good that comes out of bad always seems to amaze me here in America. It really does.
Yeah, I told myself this early this morning when I was talking to my wife about that. You think about all of the good that happened, all of the heroes that stepped up, all the selfless people, and after the fact, people that are standing in a line that ain't moving. And is not, that line does not look like it's going to move quick anytime soon, right? And people are just patiently waiting there so that they can give blood to people they don't know. And when you think about this, so you witnessed hundreds and hundreds of people doing that. We all saw how thousands and thousands of people behaved, and the stories are all uplifting in their own way. There's, my point is this, one bad guy in the story. I mean, if you just wanted to say, are people good or are people bad, one guy did a terrible thing. But what we are reminded is that thousands and thousands and thousands of people did the right thing. And now hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people anonymously are, with no thanks, doing good, right things. That's the human spirit, I believe. I don't want to get preachy here, but haven't we all had conversations with ourselves like this lately? And that's the conclusion I want to come to, Sam.
You couldn't have said it any better, honestly. I was in line. I was behind a woman from San Francisco and in front of a gentleman from Europe. He was born in Europe. And the three of us couldn't be any farther away from Vegas in our everyday lives, yet here we are on our supposed vacations in line to give back. And we had stood there for about 3 hours, and they finally came up and said, folks, we don't have enough staff. We don't have enough equipment. We're running out of time. We'd like you to come back later on today at 6 o'clock. And we all took our papers and our tickets, and we have appointments for later on tonight. But that just goes to show you how much people that have nothing to do with Vegas and don't really know a lot of people that were hurt or injured or perished, it doesn't matter to us, John. We're just there trying to help out. And actions do speak louder than words. I mean, there are a lot of people that are posting about thoughts and prayers and, you know, condolences and all that. But these are people that literally flock to a place that they're not from to help people that they don't know. And it's a beautiful, beautiful scene.
So do you have any other observations or stories either about the shooting that night or what's happened since, Sam? I mean, it's been 24 hours since we spoke. What else have you picked up?
It's been such a blur, honestly. I didn't even think about how long it's been. It started, shooting started about 10:30 local time on Sunday night, and here we are local time now on Tuesday afternoon. It's 12:24, so not much time has passed, like you've said. I think that first day was just shock and the abandonment of the Strip. That was what really pulled my heartstrings, you know, to see the Strip empty, no cars, no people lining up and down one of the busiest places in the world. When you think about celebrations and fun and bachelor and bachelorette parties, the place was a ghost town, King John. It was a ghost town. Now, fast forward the next day on Monday, a lot more people, you know, not much emotion in people. I mean, not much conversation, I should say. You know, nobody really wanted to talk. I was on the elevator from my room down to the lobby. People just looked like, they just looked so sorrowful and sad, and you could see the pain in their eyes. It's a little better today. People are having, you know, small talk in the lobbies, and people are talking with them amongst each other in the restaurants, and people are back in the casinos. So I can't say it's returned to normalcy, but it's certainly more of the Vegas that you imagine with the hustle and the bustle and the crowds. Nobody seems to be fearful of lightning striking twice. So it seems like it's going to take some time. And I talked to a lot of people that were near the concert. I asked even my Uber driver this morning, will you ever go back to a concert there? And he said, no chance. So I think there will be hesitation to go to some things for a while. But usually time does heal all things.
Yeah, I suppose so. And if ever a city would bounce back, maybe it's Las Vegas. Did you watch Jimmy Kimmel last night? He reminded us that this isn't just a tourist stop. People live here. This is their home. It's as much a home for those Nevada residents as Chicago is for you and me. Did you see any of Jimmy Kimmel's monologue last night?
I didn't see it. I don't know if he's from Vegas or he's lived in Vegas, but he spent many years in Vegas. What did he have to say?
He was very emotional and, you know, went on a sort of a monologue rant about gun control and why we need to, you know, keep the weapons. Why would anybody need weapons like that was his point. He didn't say no. He didn't say throw out the Second Amendment. He said throw out those weapons. We've got to stop that. And he was just, he's just an emotional wreck these days. But it was a good, you know, it was a good speech, at least for those who are sympathetic to that message. He sure spoke from the heart. He spoke very well.
He did a show on a college station here, according to the internet. He did a show on KUNV at UNLV while he was in high school. So he definitely spent some time here in Vegas. It's close to his heart.
Yeah. Hey, safe travel, Sam. I'll see you in the studio. Are you going to be back in studio with us this week?
I will be back tomorrow. I'll be back in there on Saturday. And by the way, did you catch how we lost that Monday Night Football game last night? I know sports are a footnote right now, but did you see how that game ended?
You are picking five games a week. No, I didn't pay any attention.
We were getting 6.5, so we could lose by 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. The game is tied, John, with 7 seconds left.
Yeah.
And the Redskins somehow lost by 9.
And you like the Redskins this year, at least having our game so far.
They were tied with 4 seconds left.
You could lose by 3. You could lose by 6 or 7. We lost by 9?
They kicked the field goal. Kansas City kicked the field goal. And on the kickoff to give the ball back to the Redskins, it went out of the end zone. So no time came off the clock on the first play with, I don't know, 4 seconds, 3 seconds left. Redskins fumble, Chiefs pick it up, score a touchdown, and I almost fell to the floor.
All right, we'll talk later. Sorry about that, pal. Phil Vitale, the restaurant critic for the Chicago Tribune, is in our studio. Steve, you remember how you and I were talking about Phil's very interesting list of Phil's 50, the top restaurants in Chicago?
Yes, and how I'd been to 2 of them.
Had you been to 2?
I was at Blackbird.
Yeah.
And I think Blackbird, I think there
Purple
was one
Pig?
Of them. No, I didn't get to
I had
the
been
Purple
to Purple Pig.
Pig.
Well, let's start at the top. Alinea, or do you say Alinea?
I say Alinea.
I think
I want to work with him on the pronunciation of that.
Phil, it would be much prettier if Alinea. I really
right.
think that.
Don't right. you think? It kind of rhymes with Dulcinea, so you
yeah,
can do
right.
a whole Man of La Mancha thing with.
Either way, it's a pretty sounding word. But what does Alinea mean? Why do they call it that?
It's a typographic symbol, and it was used back in the day when we were writing on paper or papyrus. Things were very expensive.
Paper,
right. Well, the pre
when it really was expensive.
Real parchment, and it was expensive.
Yeah.
And that was a little mark indicating the beginning of a new thought. We would start a new paragraph these days because we don't have expensive paper and we don't use paper anyway.
Oh, it'd be a way to save space instead of skipping
right.
all instead that white space you're not using.
You put that little alinea there and then new thought coming.
Alinea.
And then you go right from there.
So it's a new thought coming. Hey, here's a new restaurant.
That was their idea.
Oh, that's a pretty good idea. Then Grace is number 2.
Yes.
Topolobampo, Smith with a Y. Why did they pull it? Was that how they spell their name? Is that a family name?
The first restaurant they opened together was in Smith County in Chilhowie, Virginia. So they took this name from as a little way of hearkening to their origins professionally.
Momotaro?
That is a breed of Japanese tomato.
Elsk is number 6 on your list.
It's the Danish word for love.
You did not know I was going to quiz you on the...
I did not know this.
Okay,
I'm glad I'm 6 for 6,
six
but
for
I don't know
six.
What's happening after this.
Acadia?
Acadia is refers to the chef's love of all things Maine and refers to Acadia National Park, which is in Maine.
Oriole? They only serve cooked birds?
The chef's wife is from Baltimore, and that was a little tip of the hat to her favorite baseball team.
I hope you can get the next 2, and then I'm going to give you a cookie.
Okay.
Blackbird, number 9.
I just think they like the name. I do not know about anything. Sorry.
No.
It's like I just missed bucket number 6.
That's right.
Wah, wah, wah.
Wah, wah. And number 10, just to round it out, is George III, which is a new restaurant.
It is a new restaurant, and this is an homage to his father, grandfather, and one uncle, all named George, who inspired him. Father and uncle, both named George, who inspired him, and the restaurant itself is the third George.
So you had their previous position in parentheses, but I'll just ask you, I guess I could do the math on this. Who was the biggest leap? Who is the hottest new restaurant, if you judged it by either their inclusion for the first time way up or that they've moved up a lot from a previous year. Who are you really excited about?
Certainly George III, coming out of, making its debut at number 10. That's a pretty big deal, I think. And Monteverde, number 14, was number 24 when it first arrived. And I just thought it needed to be higher.
When you do this, do you consider... Is it value or is it cost included or is it atmosphere or is it just the taste of the food?
It's a little of everything. Value comes into my mind when I'm trying to figure out who gets on the list because I don't want this to be Phil's unaffordable dining experiences
right.
writ large. I want to be able to and rather than trying to identify this list as the absolute very best. I try to I try to posit this as these are the restaurants I'm excited about right now, which is why this list skews more toward newer restaurants.
I noticed that.
Than the established one. I try to include some of the established ones as well. I try to be well-rounded with this, but with any number, when any zero-sum game, when if there's no room for number 51, then you just have to make some choices.
Well, Everest is number 18 on your list. Preview, it was 14. But if this was Everest's first time on the list, would they maybe be higher? I mean, are some of them, it's easy to take for granted that they'll always be in there?
That's a really interesting question. I think, yes, if Everest debuted like this, I would be blown away.
Right.
And I probably have become a little accustomed to my blessings, as it were.
How many of these 50 have you been to? Any of them?
Nah, no, I just went through the Yellow Pages and... Remember Yellow Pages? We were talking about things that...
I know, don't exist anymore.
They sort of do, but you have to explain that this used to be this super vital part of our lives, and now it's just sort of there.
The Yellow Pages used to come to my door when I had a house. Now I have a condo, so there's eight of us sharing the building.
Right.
And there's
stack of them at the bottom.
And they're all wet because nobody's picked them up and they've been rained on. That's mm-hmm. what happens to Yellow Pages now. If you're a Yellow Page salesperson, I wish you nothing but the best, and there's great value in what you do. Okay, so you've got the 50 here, and you've touched on value, and I appreciate mm-hmm. that. But Steve and I were saying the problem with lists like this, and this was really Steve's criticism of you.
You know that's not true. You know that's not true.
Bring it.
It's like, oh, yeah, well, sure, Everest and Alinea and Topolobampo, but I'm not going there. I can't afford mm-hmm. to go. I'm never going to be there. So give me a place that... If it was a little out of my comfort range, it would be worth my while. You mm-hmm. know, I don't need a $200 prefix.
Sure.
But I'll do a $100 prefix maybe for right. the wife and I for a special occasion. So where should I go?
I'll go you better than that. I say at Topolobampo, which is all the way up there at number three.
Three.
But the threshold for entry is not that great. You're not locked into the seven-course tasting, though they do have it. You could just go with three courses and spend less than $100 and be very happy. Or do three courses and then after the third course say, you know what, I think I'm going to get another course. And they'll take care of that as well. Or something, say, Momotaro at number five, where there aren't tasting... It's not a tasting experience per se. You're a la carte, which means you control
right.
where your money's going. And then at Momotaro, there's the downstairs izakaya, which is their little street food thing, and that's much less expensive.
Would you put Purple Pig in the category mm-hmm. of approachable top
Absolutely.
50?
You can go in there, and it's all the way across the street from where we're sitting right now. And you can have... two, three dishes, depending on how much food how much of a big meal you're going to make out of it, and be very happy and not have spent very much money at all. Or just go in and have one thing and a drink.
If we do the opposite version of that, it's the company card or we just won the lottery. If you had mm-hmm. no end of budget, where would you spend it?
Then it'd be Alinea and Grace. And also, I got to say, Smith, which is newer than these two for sure.
Talk to me about Alinea. What is it like going there?
Alinea is... Grant Ackett's sort of challenging your ideas about the nature of food and the nature of how we eat it and something like that. You know, in his early days, he was doing solid versions of dishes we always thought of as liquids and vice versa. And he still has this signature finale in which a silicon pad is put on the table. Basically, a silicon tablecloth goes on the table. And then dessert sort of happens in the form of things being dropped on the table and sauces being squirted on there, and you can kind of scoop it up or not. And some things are these freeze-dried hunks that you have to break with your spoon. And if you do it right, you get a nice crack. And if you do it really right, a piece flies off the table. And he throws all these flavors you expect at dessert, and chocolates and nut flavors and sauces and fruits, and just puts them in sort of this... Art Institute, abstract sort of way.
You understand that some people don't want to do that.
Yes.
Like that at all. Go, wait, this is $200?
Right, because this is a level of food that you don't start off at. You have to get to the point where you said, you know, that's a great veal chop, but I've had veal chop, and I sort of get this.
Well, do you have a steakhouse on here? Is there a place where I can just get a 500-degree ribeye?
Yes, absolutely. Which one?
What's the best steakhouse?
I'm looking
on
for
here.
Down there. Actually, the Stealth Steakhouse is El Che Bar, and Chef John Mannion would not appreciate my referring to him in any way as a steak place. But they do all open fire cooking, and he has, last I looked, 3 or 4 steaks on the menu.
Number 28 on your list, or was 22? So, I mean, I noticed that. I don't notice anything because I don't know the menu of all these places, mm-hmm. but I don't see a lot of restaurants I recognize as Chicago's signature steakhouses.
I see. Well, then I would direct you to number 34 and Swift & Sons, which is out in the Fulton Market District, and that is your definitive, your great steakhouse.
Giant potato, giant hunk of broccoli.
No, not that. The kind of meat you expect, the appetizers are a little chefier, shall we say. You can get the baked potato. They will do that, but it's not there. It's not the same thing as just giving you some monster-sized vegetable, and that's what you start with. There'll be oysters. They have great oysters.
Huh. So you were describing Alinea. I get that. I mean, it's art maybe isn't the right word, but maybe it is what he's doing there. What about Grace? Is it a similar kind of?
It is similar. Curtis Duffy was at Alinea once upon a time, and then he opened. he was the second chef at Avenues when it got its 3 Michelin stars over 2 Michelin stars, excuse me, at the Peninsula Hotel, and he was such an integral part of that. When he left, I think they closed the place, and they said, "Ah, heck with this, we'll just make it a private party space." And he opened Grace, and it is certainly that level of refinement, but he's not doing quite as much culinary sleight of hand as Grant would do. But it's just these beautiful plates and these just amazing imaginative ways of putting food together. And you look at some of these and you go, never thought of scallops this way.
Chicago Tribune's Phil Vitale's in our studio. You may have last week seen Phil's 50, his top 50 restaurants in, are this Chicago or Chicago area? Are you in the suburbs on this as well?
I have 2 suburban restaurants in this list. I've had other suburban restaurants in previous lists.
So they could be included?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. And also I have a certificate to Girl and the Goat. Are you excited for me?
Yes. Right.
What will I get there?
Well, first get a reservation. Because that's the tough part.
Well, that's another thing I want to ask you about. Hold on a second, Phil. And this is WGN. Phil Vitale is in our studio. Chicago Tribune restaurant critic. You read him on Wednesdays. Recently, his top 50 has a list of restaurants he likes the most in Chicago and the Chicago area. So Girl and the Goat, you said the first thing you got to get is reservations. That's probably true about any of these places.
Some are tougher than others, for sure. Some are very small, and that makes it hard to get into. Giant at number 22 only has 40 seats or something like that. So it doesn't take much to fill it up. Topolo Bambo is a smallish dining room. But again, when a place is this good, it's sometimes going to be, I hope, hard to get into.
There's a place that's opening up. I live in Lakeview, not too far from Wrigley Field, not too far from Halsted. I'm so excited because there's a place opening up I want you to try. It's called Wingstop. Wingstop, they make wings. Mm-hmm. That's what they make. They make chicken wings. And they have French fries and coleslaw. And you pick up those wings and you take them home, and they'll carry you out on their shoulders. They will love you for that. Wingstop.
Right. I've actually been. They have a couple. I think they have one out in the suburbs.
Yeah. Maybe it's not all that great. I don't know. But it's convenient, and I tend to like that food.
Well, there's only so far you're going to travel for a chicken wing.
This was Steve Bertrand's point. He goes, why are you enthusiastic about chicken wings? It's the afterthought of the bird.
Oh, I don't know about that.
I don't think I agree with that at all.
I think the afterthought of the bird is the chicken thigh, and which is great because it's my favorite cut. And
oh, yes,
they're so
too.
Cheap now because all the wings are sold before the chickens sprout them, for crying out loud. And then you have the chicken breast. That's an easy sell, and everybody wants a drumstick. And the poor, lonely little chicken thigh gets no respect, and it's, to my mind, the tastiest piece of
the chicken. Juiciest, tastiest piece of the chicken.
You can get them over at Purple Pig. Last I looked, they did some very nice grilled chicken thighs.
What are you writing about in tomorrow's paper?
Tomorrow I'm going to be writing about chicken thighs. No, I'm going to be writing about a Japanese restaurant called Katana, K-A-T-A-N-A. It's in River North in the old Bin 36 space right next to the Hard Rock Cafe by Marina Towers up there between it's a Japanese restaurant. It's actually an import. Conceptually, the original Katana is on the Sunset Strip in Los Angeles. and it became a real celebrity hangout out there, and it still is. And now it's open here, but they got smart. They hired a longtime Chicago restaurateur, Jason Chan, to be the front man at this restaurant. So it has local grounding.
Huh.
And they're adjusting the menu a little bit for that.
Are you going to give it a good review?
I am.
Katana in tomorrow's Chicago Tribune. Let's go back to your top 50 list before I let
sure.
you go. So what's the best Italian place on here?
Oh, Spiaggia, although I love me some Monteverde. Not coincidentally, the chef at Monteverde, Sarah Gruneberg, who won the James Beard Award for Best Chef in the Great Lakes region this year, was formerly the head chef at Spiaggia before leaving to open her own place.
Is there an Asian food, Japanese, Chinese in here?
A little bit of everything there, yeah. We've got Parachute at number 27. It's all Asian-inflected food from chefs who actually all grew up here, even though they have some the Asian heritage. There is, mentioned Parachute. Where is, I'm looking for, Hai Su, one of my debuts at number 20, is Vietnamese. And that is terrific. At number 15, Kitsune is Elizabeth Regan's Japanese meets Midwest concept up in Andersonville.
Huh. I see that Mexique is on there, and that's mm-hmm. new. Is that a Mexican restaurant?
Yes, Mexican French. The Carlos Gaitan, born and raised in Mexico, but French in training, and his French cooking is what he did when he first came to the United States. And so this is sort of him applying his French technique to back home ingredients.
Huh. Phil and I just discovered during the commercial break that we both have sons.
We do.
Who must be similarly aged. Grant's 28.
Ed is 30. Chris is 28.
And both of our sons are getting married.
Yes.
On the same day.
On the same day, November 11th.
Yeah. So my son's
not
getting
to each
married.
Other. We should get that clear.
Not that there would be anything wrong with that.
No. Except the reception, because one's in Mexico and one's in Chicago.
Yeah. So you guys are doing the destination.
We are doing the destination wedding.
We're doing
wedding.
The stay at home. And you know, I always thought that the destination weddings were a lot of work and expensive, but getting married downtown Chicago is not inexpensive.
No.
So I don't know who of us is winning on that equation.
No. Right. Chicago is a destination for weddings.
It really is.
So having a destination is just you get to be here.
It really is. I mean, I know a lot of my kids' friends, and I know people, and it's San Diego or Hawaii or mm-hmm. India, for God's sake.
Dark side of the moon, yeah.
I know, and I'm thinking, well, y'all get to do what you want to do, but it would
right.
be easier if you just stayed here.
At my point, I'm the father of the groom. I have absolutely zero input.
You were not on that meeting, were
anything.
You?
I'm not in any meetings. I'll be glad when my invitation arrives. So that's the first. On the other hand, no pressure. But I asked my son, "What's with the destination?" And he actually made a very coherent point. They ran the numbers, and for most of their people who are traveling from out of town, a plane ride's a plane ride. It's not going to be a whole lot different from where they're going to wind
up.
Right,
if they're coming from out of town.
And by going with one of these all-inclusive resorts, there's maybe some initial sticker shock for the overall price, but then all the food's included, and you know where you're going for dinner because you're there, and you go to one of the things. And instead of having a wedding in which people do all the interaction with the bride and groom in the 4 hours between the pictures and when they dance the last hokey pokey, now they get to stretch it out over several days and maybe can spend more time with people.
So they're going to say, hey, and by the way, thank you. What a great 4-day vacation we had that we weren't otherwise
right.
going to have.
Maybe, if they do it.
Best vegan or vegetarian restaurant in the city? Is one of those on your list?
No. There are a lot of places that do a lot with vegetarian dishes and things like that. Most notably, Bad Hunter, which is my favorite name for a vegetarian-focused restaurant.
Oh, that's good.
It's like the best name ever.
I don't even like vegetarian dishes. I'm going to go there for that.
Right. The veggie dishes they do there are superb. You can't actually call it a vegetarian restaurant because there is a little animal protein, very little, but it's there, just like Green Zebra out on Chicago Avenue. It's vegetable-focused but not strictly vegetarian. And I think in this market, strictly focused vegetarians just don't play as well.
Hey, the restaurant's got to make a living, so
right.
let them put a little in there.
Right, so a little chicken thigh maybe.
It's nice to see you again, Phil. Come on with us more often. You can read the list in last week's Chicago Tribune. Search Phil Vitale and check him out tomorrow. He's got a new restaurant called Katana, which I believe means sword in Japanese. You can add that
That's
to your
correct.
list.
Yes.
Thanks for coming in.
My pleasure.
Rokan, Anna DeVlantis have just tripped into the studio. Hi.
Hi there, John.
And we're going to go fairly quickly here because we're going to let Judy start her news in advance of a press conference out of Las Vegas from law enforcement there with more details.
Keep going. I'll get out of your way. Have a good show.